You're listening to Wolves Potluck.
And hey, welcome to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And we are here for our February 2026 mid-month book news check-in, where we go over the latest Asian and Asian American book and publishing news. As always, Books and Boba is supported in part by our listeners. So if you've been enjoying our podcast and want to become a bigger part of our book club, head on over to patreon.com/booksandboba, where as an official Patreon supporter, you gain access to our members-only Discord server. We can chat with us and fellow book club members in real time about all sorts of topics, including our monthly book club picks. And if you join us at the Honey of Boba level, you also gain access to our monthly bonus podcast, Boba Chats, as well as the opportunity to help us pick a patron's choice book club pick once per quarter. As always, thanks to everyone who has joined our Patreon so far, and we definitely hope to see more and more of you there as well. But yeah, Rira, February, it's almost over, which also means the Olympics are almost over, and I've been following your Instagram stories.
Yeah, who hasn't? Everybody's been following.
Watching your play-by-play of the figure skating competition. I think, you know, when we first started this podcast, you were probably the friend that was most into figure skating. But now that I've met, like, there's a lot of book people that are really into figure skating.
Yeah, like, I figured that out, like, recently. I mean, there were a couple of author friends that, you know, were former figure skaters or, like, were really into figure skating before they became authors. But then a lot of authors, like, got into it recently. Maybe it's because, the heated rivalry started an interest in ice sports. But, a lot of people were reaching out after my stories. And they're like, yeah, I can't believe the score was this. Or like, oh, I like this program more. And I'm like, oh, okay, you're part of this club too. Welcome.
I feel like that's a sign of, like, a sport gaining traction is when people actually, like, nerd out about the numbers, right? Like, that's like usually reserved for, like, the mainstream sports.
Yeah, I mean, it's really good because figure skating is, like, a dying sport in terms of, like, fandom. The fans that we do have are very passionate and they go to events and, you know, they spend money, but we need more people to watch. So if you are a 4 years watcher of figure skating, I promise more drama and more exciting programs happen throughout the year. We have the Grand Prix, we have the World Figure Skating Championships that's happening at the end of March. That is a chance for Ilya to have his redemption, like Nathan Chen back in 2018. Nathan Chen totally missed a podium at the 2018 Pyeongchang Olympics after, you know, fucking up his short program. And then, but then he did Worlds a couple of weeks later and he won gold. And he won gold at World Championships for 3 years straight. And then he came back to the Olympics in Beijing and won gold. So,
yeah.
Yeah, history repeats itself, hopefully, in this regard.
All right, well, in addition to the Olympics going on, there's also a ton of book and publishing news. I feel like the publishing industry is getting back in the swing of things now that the holidays are over. And so, yeah, we're going to go through a bunch of upcoming publishing announcements from authors of Asian descent. Once again, thanks again to Rira for compiling this list from Publishers Weekly, social media, and other sources. Rira, can you start us off with our first book deal of the month?
All right. So in an exclusive submission, Delacour Romance bought Blur the Lines by Kanitha P. Her debut YA Formula One romance is about the daughter of a team principal who spends a gap year traveling with her father's F1 team and begins to see her childhood best friend, a hot rookie driver, in a whole new light. Publication is planned for fall 2027.
Yeah, I'm looking up Kanitha on Google and it looks like this is a part of a series of F1 driver romance books.
Yeah, I found out recently that there's a crossover between K-pop fans and Formula One fans.
Really?
Yeah, it's weird. Like, a lot of K-pop fans are into Formula One racing. And, you know, they make, like, photo cards of the Formula One racers. And it's kind of like when they organize going to concerts. They organize trips to go see the races.
Really? Who's the one that they stand the most, right? Because I know like people are into Lando because he's young and like kind of brash, but then...
Who? I don't know. I don't follow racing. I am not one of those K-pop fans. I literally only follow one sport, and we talked about it in the beginning of this podcast.
I mean, F1 racing has gotten really popular thanks to the Netflix documentary Drive to Survive, which kind of chronicles every season. And, you know, racing is also a very like individual sport, but there's also a lot of drama because there's a lot of money behind it, right? A lot of personalities. And a lot of rivalries, and like F1 is also very European, so you got a lot of like, you know, Euro dudes, very extra, very dramatic, right?
I know that for a lot of like my friends who do follow Formula One racing, like they do face a lot of criticism from the male fans who are just like, why are you here? You're just here because you want to be a pick me girl. And it's like, God forbid a girl has hobbies like watching sports.
I mean, by all accounts, the dudes are like, you know, they are pretty good looking dudes, and they all have like, a lot of them are charming, some of them are jerks, but like any other sport, it's kind of, I feel like everyone has an entry point, but then sooner or later you become like the person who understands scoring, understands strategy, right? Like I feel like, you know, heated rivalry is getting a lot of people into watching hockey. Like a lot of people are watching hockey, Olympic hockey right now, because of heated rivalry. And because of
congratulations to the U.S. women's team, by the way, won gold. I'm like, yes, like tell me that women's sports don't matter when we're winning like most of the golds in those fields. But anyway.
Right. And like, yeah. Because of that, people are like, oh, now they understand what lines are. They understand what an offsides is. Right. And we everyone has an entry point in like, I feel like we shouldn't like hate on people just because they have a different entry point than we do. Right. Like, I feel like people need to. There's just this whole like aspect of gatekeeping, something that like you know, there's always going to be some aspect of gatekeeping when a previously niche fandom goes mainstream, right? I feel like K-pop had that moment too, like a couple years ago, right?
Yeah. I mean, I have like a whole debate conversation on that too, but I'm really glad that Kanitha is writing a romance that is, you know, centered on Formula One racing, because that's not something that I've really seen in media. Like I think there was like that Brad Pitt movie on like Formula One racing, and that was just kind of like, okay, that's like a dude movie. There wasn't like romance involved, right? So
I mean, I haven't watched it just because they did to Simone Ashley what they did to Manny Jacinto in the new Top Gun movie, which is like they cut of her scenes.
Yeah. I did hear about that. But it sounds like a really fun book. I mean,
yeah,
childhood best friend turned driver. That's a great love interest.
I mean, sports in general has just so much drama, and then you add romance, so it's a perfect marriage. I think it's a perfect combination. And I'm sure this romance will be a lot of fun to read too. All right, our next deal. Putnam bought in an exclusive submission, "Paper Ghost" by Samantha Chong. This Malaysian YA fantasy is about a paper effigy maker who buries herself in her mundane work as a soul guide to cope with the aftermath of the ghost realm terrorizing her world a year prior. When she is attacked by a vengeful ghost, she is yanked out of her comfort zone and must overcome her fear of the art of death rituals to prevent the rise of the undead. Publication is slated for spring 2028.
Paper ghosts. Yeah, I guess we do have like burning of paper goods for our ancestors, or at least like that's like Chinese custom.
Yeah, do Koreans do that too?
No, not really. I mean, we have like jeza, which is, you know, laying out the food at like the table. There's like a certain order to it, and you usually do that on like holidays.
Right. This is interesting. I feel like there's a lot of world building going on in this description. Like, it's definitely, you get the feeling that this is a world where ghosts are, you know, everyday things, a common thing happening, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, in East Asian culture, I do know that there's like a lot of paper charms that are made to prevent like evil spirits from coming into the house. I mean, we just celebrated Lunar New Year, so I'm not sure if that is a thing in like Chinese culture.
Not
but
necessarily.
I have noticed that. Yeah. I have noticed like people putting stuff on their doors, and they like have like affirmations on those papers. But yeah, paper effigy, it means like sculptures made out of paper, so it's probably way cooler than just strips of calligraphy.
Yeah, no, the calligraphy on the door, that's a New Year's thing to kind of like to capture all the luck and fortune. The paper effigy is more like, you know, when you're burning, so traditionally you burn papers that represent like gold and money for your departed family members for festivals and when you go visit, right? So the effigies are like, there's people that specifically make things like paper iPads, paper cars.
Oh yeah, I've seen like paper BMW. Right?
Yeah. So which makes me wonder, is this book take place in like our world, our Earth, or is it like a fantasy inspired world, right?
Yeah, I'm leaning more towards the latter because it is talking about like the ghost realm terrorizing their world. So I'm like, okay, that sounds a little bit more supernatural to the point where I'm like, it's probably pure fantasy rather than like contemporary with fantasy.
Yeah.
But congratulations to Samantha Chong on her book deal with Paper Ghosts. All right. Next up, we have Delacorte Press acquired Cold Blood by Ashna Avachat. This whodunit mystery follows an aspiring journalist who is recruited to solve the murder of a wealthy patriarch of a reclusive family before it happens. Publication is scheduled for fall 2027. Oh, this kind of reminds me of, what was that Tom Cruise movie where they like arrest criminals before the crime is committed?
Oh, Minority Report?
Yeah, Minority Report, yeah.
Kind of. I don't really see the sci-fi angle from this description. Maybe it's
saying that it's like, yeah, I'm just like the whole like, oh, solve a crime before
the crime happens. Maybe the wealthy patriarch got a death threat from someone and she has to figure out how someone might want to kill him. It kind of reminds me of like white hat hackers, right? People who hack systems on behalf of the company to kind of figure out where the exploits are before the, you know, actual hackers come in and figure it out.
Yeah, and I'm glad that the main character, the amateur sleuth in this regard, is an aspiring journalist. So not even like a real journalist who has been on the who's been pounding the pavement, has like like spotlight articles under their belt. So
yeah,
sounds like a fun protagonist.
Also, the fact that the client is a wealthy patriarch of a reclusive family. Meaning, I'm just thinking of the Knives Out family, just a family like probably a terrible rich
true.
People, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. Congrats to Ashna on the book deal. All right, next up, Disney Hyperion has acquired an exclusive submission, an untitled contemporary YA romantic drama by Jasmine Kaur Dill. In this romantic drama, Shandani Sharma, whose academic future depends on her keeping an academic scandal under wraps, races to stop a rival student from exposing the corruption, even as they begin to fall for one another. Publication is planned for late 2027 or early 2028.
So it says academic scandal. So I'm picturing like private schools where everybody is like hyper competitive and there's some like shady dealings with like the administration in that school.
Yeah, I'm thinking it either has something to do with a cheating scandal. Maybe like Chandani is helping a richer student cheat. And they get caught or they get, you know, or it gets, you know, swept under the rug or some sort of admission scandal. Right. But it's, I think definitely she gets caught up with someone with more power and then has a vested interest in supporting the corruption in the face of like truth and justice. Right. It's a really interesting position to be in.
Yeah. This kind of reminds me of like the SAT taking scandal that happened. No, it wasn't SAT. It was college applications. Where rich parents were like paying to get like fake recommendations and like fake like have like their kids enrolled in sports, but like not have them actually participate in the There was a whole thing that happened like 2 years ago. I've like completely wiped it from my brain. But
the Varsity Blue scandal.
Varsity Blue scandal. Yeah. So academic scandals, that is a thing that, you know, happens quite often. I'm surprised that the imprint is Disney Hyperion, because I'm usually like picturing like Percy Jackson, like things that are like more in the fantasy side. So that is a surprise in terms of like the story.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they've done contemporary, they've done other types of drama too.
Yeah, I mean, like when I think about Disney Hyperion, like a lot of their middle grade stuff is geared more towards fantasy and adventure, and I know they have like expanded to young adult, so I'm guessing that like this is kind of part of their expansion, since this is like a romantic drama and not really like, it's not sports, it's not fantasy, it's not adventure, it sounds like there's like a little more mystery to it as well. So it is a little bit different from their usual portfolio.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely like more of a thriller too, right? So there's some thriller aspects to it, because she's essentially trying to cover up a corruption that will implicate her, right? So kind of a little bit of scandal in there too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, next up, Penguin Workshop bought The Strange Sketches of Luna Lee by Gloria L. Huang, a fantastical ghostly middle grade novel in which Luna finds a mysterious pen in a rumored to be haunted fairground and is shocked to discover it can draw people to life, including an intriguing unknown boy and her deceased older sister. Publication is scheduled for spring 2027. This sounds like a more dramatic and angsty version of Chalk Zone from Cartoon Network, where there's a little boy with a magic chalk who can draw things to life. So
I've never seen that, but this definitely gives like Goosebump vibes, which I'm all about. I when I was in middle school, I would have loved an Asian American theme, like middle grade supernatural, not necessarily horror, but like supernatural drama, right?
It kind of has like a monkey's paw aspect.
Yeah, it sounds like there's definitely a catch to the magic in this pen, and I'm sure it's going to lead to some epiphany, some coming of age, and probably some tears too, right?
Maybe it's because like I'm a millennial Asian American girl, but I hope this like mysterious pen that draws ghosts to life is like a gel pen. It's like a pen that you get from like Morning Glory. It's like pretty with charms on it.
One of those pens, did you ever have the pen where there would be like different colors you can click?
Oh, yeah. I used to have so many of those because back in our days when everything was analog, you would have to like mark your papers, essays that we would write by hand, you know, because we weren't allowed to have Chromebooks and all. But this sounds spooky. And I'm down for it.
Yeah.
You know, middle grade spooky books are, I feel like it's like a coming of age genre, you know, like Goosebumps, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
Goosebumps. I had like Nancy Drew. The spooky vibes are strong during middle school years.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's an easy way to incorporate like allegory and symbolism in like middle grade novels when you involve, you know, ghosts and spirits and mysterious pens. So yeah, congrats to Gloria on the book deal. All right, next up, FSG has bought a new YA horror romance by Michelle Jing Chan titled She Comes Out at Night. The novel is about a teenage girl who takes a summer job as a fire lookout in a national park to escape her conservative hometown and a secret she's never dared to voice. Her solitude, however, is shattered by eerie phenomena, including speaking crows, a persistent presence in the woods, a voice on the radio calling her name, and the emergence of a doppelganger that threatens to take her place. Publication is set for winter 2029.
You know, this kind of reminds me of the video game Firewatch.
I was just thinking about Firewatch. Yeah.
The thing about like jobs where you work at national parks, it's creepy. I could never do that because the responsibility is so great and the isolation is so like unnerving.
And it gets so dark, right?
Yeah, that too. Like, and you're in like the woods. Like, there could be a serial killer out there. Like,
also bears.
Also bears, yeah. But I fear men over bears, so
yeah. There's definitely something unsettling about being out in nature by yourself at night because it gets dark too. If you're, I don't know if you've ever been like camping, but it gets real dark at night.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this job is way better than staying in her conservative hometown. I'm guessing it's also like homophobic. As well, so
I'm getting those vibes too. Yeah, something that the town would look down on, but is like kind of something that like a conservative hometown would look down on, right?
And when you're a teenager and you're like living under your parents' roof, there's only so much agency you have. So I'm guessing like this job in the middle of nowhere in a national park is like, okay, well, this is my only escape. Otherwise, you know, there's like other.
Yeah.
Programs like sports and whatnot, but they cost a lot of money. So if this is a job, then it's like, well, it comes with its pros and cons.
But it's also a romance. So, like, do you think there's someone on a different tower somewhere, a different fire watch somewhere else that's like they talk over the radio? I mean, that'd be kind of
I'm new to the horror romance genre, but it seems to be expanding because I have an author friend who is kind of like specializing in that genre. And I was really surprised that there's like a very intense fandom there. So, yeah, like what happens? Is there a happy ending at the end when it's a horror romance? I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, Quiltree acquired If We Could Be Everywhere by Sarah Souk, the author of Meet Me at Blue Hour. Set in a world with teleportation technology, this YA speculative novel follows two exes who find themselves only able to teleport to each other rather than where they're trying to go, leading to long buried sparks reigniting. Publication is scheduled for winter 2028. Sarah Souk is a friend of the podcast. We've had her on our show when her book Made in Korea came out in 2021. Since then, she's released a bunch of books. She's been, you know, grinding them out. And this sounds really cool.
Yeah. Speaking of horror romance, there's also been an uptick of like of speculative romance, right? Of like sci-fi romance. Yeah, books like Dustin Tao's No, You Reach Sam, and
You Found Oliver.
Yeah, yeah. I will say though, I feel like where your mileage may vary with this one is your tolerance of second chance romance. I know like it's not everyone's cup of tea. The idea of like having the ability to teleport, but only teleporting to your ex sounds like a horror story to me.
Yeah, that sounds terrible. Imagine if, say, you're in a rush and you have to like go to a job interview. And you use your teleportation technology to like not be late, and then you end up seeing your ex, and it's like, not now. Why?
Yeah, but what a fun way to kind of bring these two ex lovers back together. It's not like a meet cute or like it's not like a coincidence. Like it's like, you know, instead of like seeing each other 10 years later at like a conference or on the street, it's like, oh no, I've teleported into you.
Yeah, I was just thinking how it would be nice for LA folks to have teleportation technology because we have such notoriously high traffic time, and also our public transport isn't the greatest if you don't live near like dense neighborhoods. So yeah, I was just thinking about that too.
Yeah,
but I'm a boring adult.
I'm well, like, I mean, not
what
to
if
get
we
into-
could use this teleportation technology for good for me?
I'm also curious what type of teleportation this is, right? Because like, I feel like the type of teleportation also will affect whether I want to use it. Like if it's a wormhole type thing, then yeah, sure. I'm just jumping between two fixed spaces in time. But if it's like Star Trek, where like you're essentially copying yourself, right? Like that, I don't know. I feel like I'm entering more like existential, like do I still have a soul questions there, right?
Yeah. What if it's like what if it's that where when you teleport, it's a clone and it's like, because you're a clone, you're not actually the ex that got broken up with. So there's a second chance in that regard. I'm probably writing a totally different book.
Yeah,
we've
entered horror now. We've entered, this is like what the, speaking of video games, like if you ever played Soma, that's like kind of a big plot point in that.
Yeah, it's definitely Soma-esque. Yeah. Revealing but, all of our nerdy hobbies on this podcast.
I'm sure this story is a lot more sweet and a lot more romantic than what we are making it out to be. And yeah, congrats to Sarah on the book deal. All right, next up, Penguin Workshop has bought in an exclusive submission, The Sisterhood of Southern Peaches, a three-book contemporary middle grade series by Katrina Moore. The series is about three new friends who discover the magic of peaches in Atlanta, alongside the trials and tribulations of crushes, periods, and middle school disasters. Publication is scheduled for spring and summer 2028 and spring 2029, respectively.
Wow, this sounds like a book that I would have loved in middle school. Yeah. One of my favorite series growing up was Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. I had all of the books and then I lent that out and I never got them back. And that was like my first heartbreak in friendship, where I'm like, oh, sometimes you give out you lend out your books to friends and you break up with those friends and those friends keep your books and they never return them. But I am from the Metro Atlanta area, and I did go to middle school and high school in that area. So I'm like, yeah, it sounds like a book that I would have enjoyed when I was in school.
It sounds like a really fun and charming, like, coming of age story for middle school kids, but also with the little addition of magic, right? Like a little witchy maybe. Was Sisterhood of Traveling Pants, was that witchy or is that just like?
No, it's not witchy. So in Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, it's like a story about four girlfriends who were pretty much friends since they were born, because their moms met at like a prenatal yoga class. So they were like all born in the month of September. So they've been friends for like life at this point. And it's their first time they're going to be spending summer apart, because they all have like their own shit to do. Like one is going to soccer camp. One has like a part time job somewhere. The other one is like going to Greece to meet extended family. Yada, yada, yada. They go to a thrift shop and they find a pair of jeans that magically fits all of them. And that's magic because they're all different sizes, different heights. And they spend the summer passing these pants along. Like,
right. Okay.
With like notes and stuff. So there is a magic element there, which is why it like reminded me of why this book reminded me of Sisterhood of Traveling Pants. Other than the title,
right?
But Magic Peaches, I have to say, like, as someone who grew up in Georgia, I did not eat a lot of peaches.
Yeah, you know, I'm rereading the description that says the magic of peaches, so maybe they just discover how good the peaches are and not the peaches are magic, right? Maybe I'm just reading.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah, maybe.
But either way, sounds like a lot of fun. Sounds like a really cool, you know. I think every generation needs their version of like seminal texts, right? Like we just read Bad Asians by Lillian Lee. And, you know, there's something to be said about the next generation having their own version of the Sisterhood of Traveling Pants that they can relate to, right?
Yeah. And yeah. Of course, people forget that there are Asians in Southern states. Like, there is a stereotype where it's like, oh, it's only white people in like Texas or Georgia. But there's actually quite a few of us in enclaves. So it would be nice to like read about that experience of like, oh, being Asian American, you're kind of in a world where like, okay, yeah, I do see people who look like me. However, I'm still treated poorly because we're in a southern state where there's a lot of Republicans. So, again, I'm projecting a lot of my own experiences to this book that I have not read. But congratulations to Katrina Moore. I'm looking forward to reading the books once it comes out.
Yeah.
All right. So our next book deal is Abrams Bot Footprints in Snow by author illustrator Keiko Hayner. In the picture book, a girl spots two big footprints. In the picture book, a girl spots two.
Too big.
I can say too big. Okay.
Footprints are too big.
Yeah. In the picture book, a girl spots two big footprints in the snow and wonders who they. La la. Okay. I'm gonna do this all over again. All right. Next up, Abrams Bot Footprints in Snow by author illustrator Keiko Hayner. In the picture book, a girl spots two big footprints in the snow and wonders who they could possibly belong to. Drawing on her imagination, she crafts a snowy explanation and sets off with her dad for a magical night. Publication is set for fall 2027.
This sounds cute and all, but I would not go chasing two big footprints into the woods. That is probably a bear or a Bigfoot, right?
Yeah, that too. But also, like, this is a little girl. Everything must be big to her.
Might just be a big dude. It's probably just a big dude, right?
Maybe.
Although if they do find a Bigfoot, that would be fun, too.
Maybe no, that would Bigfoot. Be fun.
Yeah. This sounds like a delight. And again, adding it to the list of books that I'll probably read to my kids in a year or two. All right. Our next book deal, Dutton Has Acquired Something Inside Me Knows by National Book Award winner Melinda Lowe, who book club members might also remember was the author of our past book club pick last night at the Telegraph Club. Incorporation First Found Poetry and Lyric Essay, this debut memoir weaves a nonlinear story story of immigration and identity, connecting Melinda's childhood in small-town Colorado in the 1980s to her grandmother's experiences in wartime China. Publication is scheduled for March 2027.
This is a very interesting format. Free verse, found poetry, and lyric essay, and memoir. So very creative.
Do you know what found poetry means? Is that like found footage, but poetry?
Yeah, I'm guessing it's like found footage, but it's like poetry that was discovered. I'm guessing her grandmother wrote poems.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like Melinda's, you know, much like a lot of us, especially of our generation of Asian Americans, has a very, you know, we all have grandparents who have lived through just like unimaginable things, right? And you know, we always talk about how it's important for, you know, those of us who can't, you know, put those stories, you know, on paper, on tape, on the screen, to make sure they're archived for the next generation. And it's really cool that Melinda is doing that in her own way. This sounds like a really interesting format. Go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And like Melinda Lowe is like a trailblazer. Like she is like one of the early Asian American authors that I remember as like as a kid growing up. And also she's written like pretty much a lot of queer stories that have become like a cornerstone in queer Asian American literature. And I'm wondering if like her own personal experiences with like identifying as like a queer Asian American is going to be in this memoir. So I'm very curious to read it, because it's not only tying to like her childhood in Colorado, which I'm guessing did not have a lot of Asian Americans, and then you have like her grandmother's story fleeing wartime China. So
yeah.
All right, so our next book deal is Scholastic bought world rights to The Luckies, a series by Sarah Milanowski and Christina Suntorbat, and illustrated by Maddie Wong. The series is about two teenage stepsisters who really don't get along, and the drama that ensues when their blended family moves to a gossipy small town as part of the new next line of middle grade novels. Christina Suntornvat is also an author we've had on this show. She is the author of A Wish in the Dark and The Last Mapmaker. She is a Thai American writer. And it's always great to see past guests like come out with new books.
Yeah, I mean, she's written all sorts of books at this point. YA, middle grade. I think she
nonfiction.
Also, nonfiction, yeah. She had that book about the Thai cave rescue. Interesting that this is like a duel. So, I'm assuming here, but the stepsisters, probably one is Asian and one is white.
Yeah, that's what
probably.
I'm guessing too. Right? Yeah.
But this sounds real charming. It sounds like a lot of things that we've enjoyed in like past things that we've seen or read. You know, Gossipy Small Town reminds me of Mimi P. Manasala's, you know, murder mysteries. And the two stepsisters, did you ever watch the new the Freakier Friday?
No, I've actually never even seen the original.
But yeah, the setup kind of reminds me of that as well, because that is also, you know, Lindsay Lohan in that film, Lindsay Lohan and Manny Jacinto get married, and their daughters become stepsisters and shenanigans ensue. I don't know if there's any body switching in this book, but it does sound like a setup ripe for fun. For some middle grade fun, right?
Yeah. And I can imagine, you know, if you move to a gossipy small town that is basically made up of white people, I don't know if this is a white American town, but it's just like the confusion of like, wait, you guys are sisters, but like one of you is Asian and the other one is white. Like how can you guys be part of a family that does not compute?
But it's also, you know, you not only have to move to a new town, you also have to deal with a new like fully grown sibling, right? Teenager, like moving when you're a teenager sounds like a lot already.
Yeah. And restarting at school is always always a struggle.
Yeah, so congrats to Sarah and Christina and Maddie on the book deal. All right, next up, Penguin Workshop has acquired in a six-figure deal, The Monster Inside by Sherry Moe. This picture book is about by Cherry Mo, which is a picture book about sisterhood and a girl who is haunted by an ever-present monster, her OCD, that turns out to be less scary than she thought. Publication is scheduled for spring 2028.
Yo, we're getting picture books about OCD. That is progress.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's never too early to talk about like mental health and to, you know, demystify it, right?
Yeah, yeah. And to make it seem less scary, like which is, you know, the moral to the story of the monster inside. And yeah, I feel like OCD is something that people have kind of changed it to their own definition. I don't know if that like makes sense, but like people are like, oh, I have OCD habits. I like clean everything. And it's like, that's not the same as actually having OCD. So yeah. It would be nice to like, it's nice to see that there is a young reader book that kind of, you know, sets the definition for what OCD is.
Right. And, you know, books for young readers are not only for the kids, but also for the parents, right? For the parents to read and also for like the parents to read and gain the knowledge and language to, you know, if your kid does have, you know, OCD or to better address, what's the right term here? Better. They're not only for the kids, but also for the parents to, you know, read and also gain the language to better understand what OCD is and how they can work with the kid, right?
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, I wish my parents had picture books that kind of explained. I don't have OCD, but it's like, oh, depression and anxiety disorder, and so that they would have had a resource to know like what it was like for a kid to deal with that, because there's a lot of things that, you know, kids are learning how to do, and you add that in and it's like, I don't know what I'm doing. So, I feel like this is a really important book that tackles a really important subject. All right. Next up, Simon & Schuster bought North American rights to middle grade novel Jiddy and the Machine, written by Mitali Banjuri Roots and illustrated by Jacopo Bruno. In this steampunk adventure set in Victorian India, we follow a driven young inventor who gets caught up in a wild scheme and races to outwit forces far more powerful than she has ever imagined. Publication is slated for spring 2027.
This sounds like a lot of, I personally, I'm a big fan of the steampunk aesthetic. And I love that this takes place in, you know, Victorian India, which means the novel will probably address themes like colonization and hopefully some rebellion, right?
Yeah. I'm just like looking at my dates here. So the Brits ruled over the Indian subcontinent from 1858 to 1947, which is when India gained its independence. And you have the whole British East India Company around this time as well. So yeah, lots of world building that we don't get to see often in mainstream media.
Yeah, and hopefully some interesting steampunky inventions as well. So yeah, congrats to Mitali and Jacopo on the book deal. All right, next up, First Second has acquired world rights to Wipeout, a middle grade graphic novel written by Sadia Faruqi and illustrated by Karen De La Vega. The story follows a Pakistani-American boy who is obsessed with skateboarding but learns the importance of family during a summer reunion. Publication is set for 2028.
Man, this sounds like a very quintessential kid experience where you're just like, Mom, I don't want to go see my family. I just want to play Pokemon. Like, I just want to hang out with my friends. I just, like, I don't want to see, like, aunties and uncles that I haven't seen in, like, 5 years. Who cares?
Yeah, or, like, Mom needs him to do something important, but then he's out way too long skateboarding and doesn't do it, which ends up putting his mom in a difficult spot. There's a lot of different, I feel like we've seen different variations of this, like, coming-of-age story. It reminds me of the short film Didi. Which follows like a Chinese American boy who really loves skateboarding and is also acting up because he's turning 13. And yeah, I think it's cool that this follows a Pakistani American boy because, you know, I feel like in the public consciousness, people still don't see Southern California.
Yeah, like I feel like skateboarding has kind of been viewed as like a rebel sport for a lot of like conservative families who are just like, you want to be a delinquent? Like, why are you like skateboarding? Like, that's the wrong crowd, you know? It's the punk alternative crowd. Like, you should be studying.
Yeah, it's something that the burnouts do, like those, you know, those pothead white boys or something, right?
Yeah, but this is a middle grade graphic novel, so I don't think we'll be getting those pothead skater boys. Or at least I hope not, because I would kind of be horrified as an older reader.
I mean, it's definitely an activity that, you know, for like conservative Asian parents, doesn't seem like something a good kid would do, right?
Yeah, but I heard that skateboarding has really taken off in like West Asia. I know the character in this book is Pakistani American, but yeah, I heard that a lot of like women skateboarders like are kind of like tearing it up in West Asia. So
yeah,
maybe that stereotype is kind of gone now. Who knows? I mean, we're much older than the reading demographic for this book. Next up, Simon & Schuster acquired The Ur Who Sings by Sally Deng. The story is about a boy who can't stand the distressing sound of his grandfather's Ur Who until his best friend and cousin moves far away. Now his grandfather's song no longer smothers like a heavy fog, but wraps him like a blanket, helping him process his sad feelings. Publication is planned for spring 2027.
Yeah, an Ur Who is like, it's a Chinese instrument. I think it's like two strings and like a bow. So if you're in Southern California, especially in Pasadena, there's always like an Ur Who guy playing in Old Town Pasadena somewhere, like on the corner near the.
Oh, Japanese, yeah. I used to see him like every day.
Yeah. If you think about like for better or worse. OK, like for like and like, you know, it's a bad example. But if you think about a Chinese sound in like movies or like a scene in a Chinese restaurant, you're probably hearing an Ur Who in the background, right?
Yeah, I would say like the closest thing is like an Eastern, a Chinese fiddle, but there's less
not
strings.
Like a fiddle, more like a viola maybe, or a cello.
Yeah.
Because it's a deeper sound than the fiddle. And it's usually like long, slow melodies. Like you don't really do a jig on an Ur Who.
Yeah. It's used for sad times, which kind of makes sense that this, like, the boy is like, I'm sad because my friend moved away. I don't mind the sad music anymore.
Yeah, I like emotional that this book growth teaches you to, you know, appreciate your grandparents while they're still around and like sharing their culture with you, because you will also miss that when it's gone as well.
Have your parents ever made you learn traditional instruments?
No. The closest
I know a couple of Chinese friends who did pick up erhu or zithers.
Yeah, it was never part of our upbringing. You know, I was in band, so I learned, you know, Western instruments. I think the closest thing to traditional arts was like I took a couple calligraphy. I did like calligraphy in Chinese school, and I took a couple like wushu classes, but. Our cultural education did not include musical instruments.
I mean, at least it's like a pleasant instrument. You know, imagine if it was like traditional Chinese drums. Can you imagine like dealing with that every single day?
That would be pretty fun.
No, it would be so loud and distracting.
Ugh. All right. Our next book deal is Putnam has bought world rights to Blooming Behind Barbed Wire. Inspired by the gardens at Manzanar, the book follows a boy's experience in a World War II incarceration camp, portraying the hope, humanity, and improbable beauty that Japanese Americans created by planting gardens behind the camp's barbed wire fences. Publication is set for spring 2028.
Very topical now that, you know, we have ICE agents kidnapping people off the streets and putting them in concentration camps, which is very reminiscent to how the Japanese Americans were treated during World War II.
Yeah, there's something interesting about books that take place during this time period, because the people inside the camps were also like walking that line between like, are we still considered American citizens when our rights are being ignored, right? But there's also a story of like resilience and survival within the camps, right? Being able to like make a life out of what they're given and not letting being incarcerated like bring them down. I think this book means to find the beauty in that, but I do agree it's hard to like see that lesson and not also think about why they're there in the first place, right?
Yeah. And I'm just thinking, like, around this time, there were a lot of Japanese gardeners. Like, nowadays, we see a lot of gardeners in LA who are of Hispanic descent. So at this time, there was a lot of Japanese gardeners. And I can just assume that, like, you building this garden in this concentration camp was like a way to make themselves feel useful and have like control in their lives, and also to find beauty in like this terrible situation that they were living in. And also, like, the food was shit back then in those camps. They didn't know how to like make Japanese food or like anything palatable. So I'm guessing that they made vegetable gardens as well. So,
yeah,
I mean, that's just like my assumption.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they were allowed to grow food. Probably, right?
I mean, it says behind the barbed wire. Maybe it was sneaky vegetables. Secret vegetable garden.
Maybe.
All right, so our next book deal is Bloomsbury bought Kat Cho's House of Forgotten Souls and its sequel. Pitched as K-pop Demon Hunters meets Cemetery Boys, this contemporary YA fantasy blends Korean mythology, mystery, and romance to tell the story of a lost spirit, a reaper, a shaman, and the girl who can save them all. Publication is set for winter 2027. Yeah, so Kat Cho is the author of Wicked Fox and Once Upon a K-Prom. When I think about Korean mythology in like contemporary settings, she is the first person that pops up. So this is a genre that she is very knowledgeable in. And with like the success of K-pop Demon Hunters, I'm like hoping that her books will get more traction. And yeah, it sounds like a very interesting cast. Lost spirit, a reaper, a shaman, and a human that could possibly save them. a ragtag group of supernatural
yeah,
beings.
Yeah, I love that it's contemporary fantasy too, because then we get to see like these mythological or these like supernatural beings interacting in like a modern context. Like it reminds me of Cho's, like, you know, What We Do in the Shadows. And I just get a kick out of like, what would a reaper do on like Friday night in Korea, right?
Yeah, I've also like this is reminding me, there's been a surge of new K-dramas where like the main character is like a shaman, or they're like a grim reaper, or they run like a hotel where spirits kind of like come to like congregate before they go on to the afterlife. I feel like there has been this uptick in supernatural Korean mythology in mainstream Korean media, but not so much here in America. So it is interesting to see.
Yeah. So congrats to Kat Cho on her book deal. All right. Next up, First Second has bought Hello Dila, Kiku Hughes' YA graphic novel about August Gao, a lonely teenager who becomes emotionally reliant on her family's smart assistant, Dila. Publication is scheduled for 2028. Would it be Dila or Dela or maybe Della, right? This is like kind of like a Siri situation where maybe it's like a regular ass name like Della, but like made into a computer name.
Yeah, I was like, maybe it's an acronym for something. Who knows?
Yeah.
I hope this is, I mean, we don't have a lot of information on it, but I'm like, I hope this is a cautionary tale. Maybe don't have an emotional attachment to things that are not humans or pets.
Or is this going to be like a singularity thing, like the movie Her, where like, you know, Della becomes self-aware? Maybe, I don't know. There's just, I feel like in this day and age, like the idea of a teenager becoming emotionally reliant on an AI has like has a different context, right? Especially these days where
it
like
scares me.
You have kids
like,
who like
quite
are
frankly.
Yeah, especially these days when you have like, you hear all these stories about school kids being overly reliant on things like ChatGPT to do like anything, right? To write a paper, to do a math problem.
Well, like I've heard pretty scary stories about kids who use chatbots like as like a friend or a therapist, and I'm like, they're not real. Like, you shouldn't be emotionally attached to them. But, you know, they're young and they're lonely. And it's not something that we've really encountered growing up ourselves. So we don't really know how to treat that. But this book can be anything. We are really just going off of a sentence here.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at Kiku's Blue Sky right now. And She seems pretty vocal in rallying against ICE in, you know, promoting Day of Remembrance. I think she has artwork depicting Japanese incarceration. So I have a pretty good feeling that this isn't like an AI will solve all our problems type of book. Yeah, I feel like looking at Kiku's profile, I have a pretty good feeling this isn't what we are fearing.
Okay, good. Yeah. Good to know. Anxiety has been.
Yeah.
Like there's been a lid put on that. So yay.
Yeah. So yeah. Congrats to Kiku on the book deal, and looking forward to you know, maybe let us know. Is it Dela or Della or Dela?
Or D-E-L-A. Who knows?
Yeah.
All right. So next up we have Tundra Choir Tay Lim Decks It Out by Angela Ahn. An illustrated middle grade novel about a lonely immigrant boy who finds his community while starting a card game league against all odds. Publication is slated for fall 2027. Man, my mind just went back to the good old days where, like, my classmates and I would play Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh! And Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, we were more of a Magic the Gathering, but yeah, there's definitely, like, playing trading cards during lunch is definitely a formative experience for me and my friends as well.
I just feel like if you are coming from a different country and you're not like familiar with the language and you don't have any friends, fandom is the way to make friends the fastest.
Yeah, this book sounds like a lot of fun. So congrats to Angela on the book deal. All right, next up, Godwin Books has bought world rights to the first three books in a graphic novel chapter book series titled Izzy and Wolfie. Written by Dane Liu and illustrated by Maya Tatsukawa, the books feature a dynamic pair of siblings whose quirky imagination and clever wordplay capture the dramas of childhood and the humor and playfulness of their Asian American family. All three books are set to publish in summer 2029. So I'm guessing the siblings are named Izzy and Wolfie.
Yeah, that's my guess too. Yeah. Clever wordplay. Huh, I am curious as to like what that means.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like they have fun banter, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely cool that this is a three book deal. So congrats to Dane and Maya, and looking forward to checking out what Izzy and Wolfie is all about.
I can also see this series be something that your twins might grow up to like, because books about siblings in Asian American families, you don't see it all too often. Yeah. So yeah, there's that too. Something to look forward to, Marvin.
Yeah.
All right. So our final book deal is HarperCollins acquired world rights to The Light Garden, written by Joanna Ho and illustrated by Minako Tomi Gahara. The picture book follows a boy who splits time between two homes and captures light in jars because it helps him fill in spaces caused by distance and missing, reminding him his family is still whole. Publication is set for April 2027. Joanna Ho is the author of Eyes That Kiss in the Corners and Eyes That Speak to the Stars. And, you know, like, she is a pretty familiar name that we see in our book deals.
Yeah, this story sounds sad. I mean, I'm guessing
child of divorce.
Yeah, right. Which sounds sad to me as someone who never had to go through that, but I know people who have gone through that. And much like Eyes That Kiss in the Corners are about, you know, books that help you form better relationships with the ways that their eyes or the way that their faces are different. You know, books like this, also important for kids who are going through these experiences as well, right?
Yeah, I'm curious as to like how he captures light in jars. Like, is it like magical where, you know, you can just go up to sunlight and just jar up sunshine, or is it like he picks up light bulbs or twinkle lights and put it into a jar?
Yeah, I mean, you know, who knows how
it could be anything.
Yeah, who knows how kids' minds work? You know, I mean, it's definitely just. I mean, it definitely sounds like it's how he copes with the changes going on. But, you know, I feel like there's some magical explanation for it. I feel like
it does sound whimsical just by the title, The Light Garden.
Yeah.
All right. So that is a wrap on our book deals. I don't have any book news in our docket because a lot of the stuff that happened in the book world has been really stupid. And I don't want to talk about
Yeah, like, and we also had a pretty long list of publication news, so we've had a pretty good episode. So I think I feel all right calling it here. So yeah, I guess that'll do it for our mid-month book news roundup for February 2026. Thank you once again to Rira for putting all of this together. I guess before we go, do you want to remind our listeners what our book club pick is for the month?
Yeah, so our February book club pick was chosen by Marvin, and it is Behind Frenemy Lines by Zen Cho. It is a workplace rivals to lovers romance that is reminiscent to Sally Thorne's The Hating Game. It is very fitting for the month of February, which, you know, Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day has passed, but we are still here for the romantic vibes, I guess.
Yeah. Having a lot of fun discussing this book with our book club members. At the time of this episode's release, we would have finished our read-along on Discord. So if you finished the book and want to share your thoughts, please let us know. As always, we'd love to include your feedback on our discussion episodes whenever possible. But yeah, I've been having a ton of fun with this book. Zen Cho, it's just like I just really enjoy the way that she writes. And it's been interesting to see what a Zen Cho contemporary romance reads like.
I do think it's funny that this book is a contemporary workplace romance that takes place in like a law firm between two lawyers, because Zen Cho is a lawyer on top of being an author. So
yeah,
she's like, you know, I'm sure she's seen some office drama at her office. So I'm pretty sure she channeled some of that into her book.
Yeah, it's been a fun read so far. I'm looking forward to discussing it with you for our next episode. But yeah, that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you all next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu, and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @booksandboba and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Hungry for spicy food and even hotter conversations? Craving community and authentic storytelling? Then join the table. This is Minor Legends, a new comedy fiction podcast supported by Potluck. Pull up every week with me, Angela Wong Carbone, and follow the stories of me and my friends as we serve up tasty tales of what it means to be Asian American at our weekly dinner hang. If you enjoy deep dishing on absurd stereotypes like tiger moms who tutor your dating game rather than grades, the insanity of your parents' immigration story, to the legend of that one good Asian cousin you can never live up to, then pull up a seat and grab a plate. Featuring dinner guests like Ronnie Chang, Brian Park, Usama Siddiqui, Celia Au, Perry Young, Supriya Ganesh, and more. It's a tasty rotation that'll leave you belly laughing and steeped in relatable and spicy conversations. Can you take the heat? Listen now for free wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, sports fans. Welcome to Asians in Hockey. You may not realize it, but there's a rich history of Asians and AAPI folks who have contributed to the legacy of the greatest game on ice. From classic legends like Julie Chu and Robin Bawa, to current greats like Lia Lum and Nick Suzuki, and even rising stars like Akane Shiga and Jason Robertson. We'll cover their stories, celebrate their accomplishments, and learn about their impact on the sport of hockey. I'm Nate Nakao, former beer league player, occasional youth hockey coach, and longtime hockey fan, and I'll be your host as we take a look at the rise of Asians in hockey. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.